Okay, good morning, Rav Bosai. As always, we welcome everyone to our Sunday morning shiur. The topic of today's shiur is based on a gemara that's found in Bava Basra, which expounds upon a pasuk that we found in yesterday's parsha. We all know that from the various praises of the Klal Yisrael that Bilam said, so the most famous is the pasuk that we say every day in the davening, Matovu Alecha Yaakov Mishkanosecha Yisrael. How goodly are the tents, are your tents, O Yaakov, Mishkanosecha, your tabernacles, Yisrael. So the question is, what exactly was he praising when he said this? What did he mean by that? So we find the Gemara Bava Basra, this is on the sheet here on the first source. The Mishnah Bava Basra tells us the following halacha. It says, "Lo yiftach adam l'chotzer ashutfim pesach keneged pesach," that if there is a courtyard that is shared by multiple people, so a person is not allowed, if Reuven and Shimon share a courtyard, and Reuven already has an entranceway from his house into that courtyard, so Shimon is not allowed to construct an opening. If he wants to make an opening from his house into the courtyard, it cannot be made directly opposite the one that Reuven made. In other words, he can't, if there's already an entrance, a door from one person's house into the courtyard, the second person cannot make his own door directly opposite the first one. And so too, the Mishnah tells us, chalon neged chalon, if two people live next to each other, and one of them already has a window in a certain location, and now you want to do some construction on your house and you want to add some windows, you cannot add a window that is directly facing his window. Okay? Why is this? So we'll go down to the Gemara. The Gemara beneath, a few lines down, says, Minoan Emili asked the Gemara, from where do we know this from? Amar Rav Yochanan. So Rav Yochanan says, Da Amar Kra Vayisa Bilam Es Einav Vayaris Yisrael Shochen L'Shvatav. That Bilam raised his eyes and he saw the way the Jewish people were encamped. It doesn't say specifically what it is that he saw. He just saw Shochen L'Shvatav, that they were encamped in a certain arrangement. Says the Gemara, Ma Ra. So what did he see? Ra She'ein Pischei Ohaleihem Mechuvanim Zelazeh. What the specific thing that Bilam noticed was that the openings to the tents were not facing each other. That there was a respect for the privacy of everyone. Each family, each person had respect for the other person's privacy, and that was demonstrated by the fact that when they had the openings to their tents, when they set up, when they pitched the tents, it was always done in a way that no one's opening, no one's door, so to speak, to the tent faced the next person's door. So that nobody could see in to what was going on in the other person's house, in the other person's tent. Omar, so Bilam said, Ru'uyin halalu shetishra aleim shechina, that such people are worthy of having a close association with Hashem. People who have such a respect for the privacy of each other, obviously, these are people who are worthy that they should have Ashras Hashchina, that the divine presence of Hashem should rest upon them. And this is where, and ultimately the Chazal and the Mefarshim say that this is what he meant when he said, Matovo Alecha Yaakov Mishkanosecha Yisrael, a pasuk which has given rise to many, many interpretations. One looks in the Gemara and the Medrash, you see many, many interpretations. What it refers to, according to some, refers to the Jewish home. According to others, it refers to the Bate Knesios and Bate Midrashos, refers to the shuls and the yeshivas. But whatever the case may be, the according to this Gemara, clearly what he meant was, Matovo Alecha Yaakov, look how beautiful it is. Everybody respects the privacy of the next person. So this is a din, which a concept which we find in the Torah that has tremendous significance attached to it, because the Torah records that this was Bilam's reaction. Now, even though Bilam was far from a tzaddik, as we know from the parsha yesterday, but nevertheless, if the Torah records something, then it obviously has a purpose, it has a value. So if the Torah is recognizing that this was Bilam's reaction, so obviously that means that he, in this regard, he was correct. So thus we see the tremendous importance of privacy in halacha. The idea that a person is supposed to have tremendous respect for the next person's privacy and not to, in this case, not to look in, not to, forgive the expression, but not to be a yenta, not to go ahead and look into, see what's going on in the next person's house. Now this topic is very relevant in our times, probably even more so than ever before. Obviously anyone's following the news, so you had the recent situation with the NSA, National Security Administration, the whole scandal with eavesdropping and surveillance of people. And this really is not the first time this has happened, but this is becoming more and more common because the technology of our times is becoming more and more sophisticated, and therefore we have an unprecedented ability to invade the privacy of others. Obviously the average person doesn't have at their disposal what the NSA does, but nevertheless there is still the possibility with computers, emails, or sometimes it happens not uncommonly that an email is sent to the wrong address, and you know you're just curious to see what the person has to say, and all these types of situations. I remember years ago, friends of mine telling me that in Brooklyn College in New York, there was a psychology teacher who the first day of the semester would always show up at the class first, and he was a young fellow, so he would sit where the students sit. He wouldn't stand by the students' desk. He would sit by the students' seats, and he would wait for the other students to come in, and he would start to make small talk with them, and then he would say, so, by the way, what did you hear about this teacher? The guy was teaching this course. You hear anything about him? So, So one of my chaverim, a fellow who I used to know, made the comment that, I don't know if it's appropriate to say exactly what he said, but he said, I heard that the teacher is the term that we use for an illegitimately born child. So, that's what he said, that I heard that, that's what the teacher is. And after a few moments, this fellow got up and walked to the front of the classroom and said, welcome everybody, I am the instructor of this course. By the way, does anybody know what a mamzer is? So my friend, who was now in a deep hole trying to dig out of it, raised his hand and said, yeah, it means a person who is a good teacher but really a difficult, gives, you know, very strict with his grades and, you know, and not that. So to which this teacher, who was not wearing a yarmulke but apparently was Jewish and had enough of an upbringing to know better, said, I know exactly what it means. So now the question is there, so on the one hand, you know, obviously, I guess he lived up to the description during that story. But on the other hand, you would ask yourself, is this right? Is it right to do that? In other words, where you're prying information, you're causing somebody to divulge something, which, you know, you're manipulating somebody to say something which is really private. He may not have, whether it was right or wrong to say such a thing, and okay, we could all say that it's not appropriate to say such a comment about a person, but nevertheless, it's as far as this teacher was concerned, it was certainly an invasion of privacy, because he never would have shared that information with him. He would have said it to somebody else. We have a lot of situations like that. A person, sometimes it is not uncommon that you get someone else's mail that's mistakenly delivered to your door, and sometimes I'm just curious, you know, what exactly is going on over here? Then you have situations where it could be to a person's benefit, where a person could be in litigation with somebody else and he has the ability to access information. You know, the question is that the correct thing to do? Is a person allowed to do that in a situation where somebody is mistreating him and maybe he can get information that would lead to somebody else being prosecuted, that somebody else will be able to be monea hezek, he'll be able to prevent himself from being damaged. So these are the topics that I would, as I say, this is very, very relevant in our times, because today we have unprecedented ability to do these things. So I think it's just important to have certain parameters. So it's hard to know each case ultimately when a situation arises, especially of significance. It's always best to consult with a Rav, but I think it's worthwhile to become sensitized a little bit to some of the issues. So if you look here on the sources here, number two, that we have a Gemara Maseches Yuma, that the Gemara says, if we go down to, I think right after the parentheses, to four lines down, the Gemara says, Rabba, the Gemara says, Rabba said, Minayin la'omer dover l'chaveiro, shehu b'bal yomar ad sheyomer lo. How do we know that if Reuven tells something to Shimon, that if Reuven shares something of information with Shimon, that Shimon is not allowed to repeat it unless Reuven gives him permission? So, ad sheyomer l'lechem mor, until he tells him you are free to repeat this. Shenemar, as it says in the pasuk, Vayadaber Hashem elov me'o'o moed lemor, that Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu lemor. Now we find very often in the Torah, Vayadaber Hashem al Moshe lemor. What does lemor mean? Lemor means that Hashem, Vayadaber Hashem Moshe means Hashem spoke to Moshe. Lemor means that he should repeat it to others. So when it says in this pasuk that when Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu, Vayadaber elov me'o'o moed lemor, so from this we derive that a person is only allowed to repeat something that somebody else told him if he was explicitly given permission to do so. But if not, then it's nobody's business. If, you know, people like to gossip and like to sit and schmooze and say, oh boy, you know what happened with this one, what happened with that one. The Gemara here is not limited to damaging information or information which is highly sensitive. But even basic talk, if somebody relates to somebody else something that's going on in their personal life, even if it's not necessarily damaging, but it's nobody else, you can't repeat it. You're not allowed to repeat it. It's personal. He told it to you. He didn't announce it. If he wants it to be known to other people, he's free to go tell it to other people. But if he just tells it, if Reuven tells it to Shimon, then Shimon has to respect the fact that Reuven shared it with him. He didn't share it with everybody else. He didn't pick up a microphone and announce it to the whole group of people nearby. And this is an idea, again, the idea, the respect for someone else's personal information. Right, we live in a world, again, not just with the technological ability to invade, but also with all the media and all the fascination with the people you have with celebrities, the paparazzi, people follow people all over the place, they can't get free, there are people snapping pictures of them all over the place, left and right, and everyone's discussing everyone else's private life and personal matters, and this, the fact that we are exposed to this leads to a great desensitization to privacy. In other words, you say, well, alright, that's why these people's, it's just amusing, these are not my friends, so who really cares, what LeBron James does, or what this one does, in their private life. It's just amusing, it's just a point of amusement to me. But a person, we become desensitized to this. Everyone pries in, a person who runs for political office, they're doresh v'choker, so they seek out all kinds of dirt. And the newspapers are all competing with each other because you sell more papers if you got the scoop. Everybody's looking to get the story, and so some things may be relevant. If a person is running for president and you find out that he has a past that he's emotionally unstable, so all right, that may be pertinent information. But on the other hand, if you're finding out that, when he was in high school, he once cheated on a test, so is that necessarily relevant? Or if you find out, what he did in his private life, it may be, it may not be. But today, everything is mutter. Everything is not just mutter, it's a mitzvah. To invade the privacy of people. And unfortunately, it carries over because we live in this culture and we breathe in this air, so we become desensitized, and therefore we tend to do it with the rabbi in the shul and my friend and my neighbor and this and that. So just as a way of putting this into perspective, the Gemara tells us first and foremost that if Reuven says something to Shimon that is not public knowledge, even if it is not harmful, even if it is not at least to Shimon's, you know, awareness, he doesn't see any harm in repeating it. He should not repeat it unless Reuven told him he could repeat it. Even if it's good news. If Reuven says to Shimon, "You hear, I got a job." So, good news. But still, that's not supposed to be repeated unless he says you could tell other people. If you're the type that want to socialize and you want to be able to say that, you should ask him, "Can I repeat this?" You know, like the journalist says, "This is on the record. Can I repeat this? Can I say this to other people?" Yeah, okay, very good. But otherwise, it remains a private conversation and should be treated as such. Now, on the bottom of the page here, the most pertinent halachic enactment that we have as far as maintaining the privacy of an individual is one of the cherems of Rabbeinu Gershom. So we know that Rabbeinu Gershom was a German rabbi who lived about 1,000 years ago, and Rabbeinu Gershom was the known as Maor HaGola, the light of the exile. He was among the greatest of the Ashkenazic Rishonim, amongst the first of the Ashkenazic Rishonim, and Rashi considered him to some degree a Rebbe, and others, you know, they looked to him with great reverence. So Rabbeinu Gershom enacted certain takonos and certain charamim. A charam means a ban. A takona is an enactment. A charam is a ban. So we know that, if you know, everybody knows the most famous cherem of Rabbeinu Gershom is the ban of polygamy. The Torah allows a man to marry more than one wife, but Rabbeinu Gershom came along and said that that should not be done. That a man can marry only one wife. That's it. And that takona was accepted. Rabbeinu Gershom, Ashkenazic rabbi, was accepted by the Ashkenazim, was not necessarily accepted by the Sfardim. And not every takona that he made was accepted by everybody. But one of the enactments of Rabbeinu Gershom pertained to privacy. And we have a copy is from the Encyclopedia Talmudis, because the actual text of the Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom is very hard to track down. The original, it's quoted over in certain sources, but as I just took it from here, it's clearly stated. So it says here, Bein Takonas Rabbeinu Gershom Maor HaGola, that's what it stands for, amongst the Takonas of Rabbeinu Gershom, Shegozer Aleihem Becherem, that he made a very strongly worded ban, Huskarav Takonas Shlo Liros Biksav Shesholeach Odom Lechavero Below Yidiyoso Below Rishuso, that a person is not allowed to read somebody else's mail. A letter that was sent from Reuven to Shimon cannot be read by anyone else. It is nobody's business, and it cannot be read. And this was one of his takonos, and he said that this is true. Even the takona goes on to say that this is even if you didn't steal it. In other words, we're not talking about going into someone's mailbox and pulling out a letter and reading it. But even if you happen to be at the person's home and he left the letter lying around, so one is not allowed to pick up that letter and read it. Because of the fact that this is a private matter, it was sent from Reuven to Shimon, and therefore for Levi to go ahead and read it is not considered appropriate. Okay, and he says further, it's brought that there was the practice was that people would write on letters that they would write something. People, when they wrote a private letter, would write on the letter Cherem Rabbeinu Gershom on the letter, meaning a warning to everybody: don't read it. You know, like the before they had skull and crossbones. You know, that's what they wrote. You know, Cherem Rabbeinu Gershom applies. Or they would write the letters Pei Gimel Yud Nun, which stands for Poritz Geder Yishchenu Nachash, that a person who breaches the wall should be bitten by a snake, meaning that, you know, strongly worded ideas that this is private, it's nobody else's business. So this was one of the takanas of Rabbeinu Gershom. Now, why did he need to do this? So you'll say, if you think about this, there are two things that you could challenge here. You could say, first of all, why was this necessary? I mean, it would seem obvious that this should be prohibited, right? And on the other hand, you could say, if in fact it was not prohibited other than by Rabbeinu Gershom, maybe it doesn't apply to us. Maybe it doesn't apply anymore. Because if one looks, in the text, in the all the quotes of the Charamim of Rabbeinu Gershon indicate that the Cherem was in at least the one about polygamy was only put into play to the end of the end of the Elef HaChamishi, till the end of the Hebrew year 5000, which we know based on our calendar today we're in the year 5773, so that Cherem expired 773 years ago. Okay, so Rabbeinu Gershon put that into play 1,000 years ago, and it was in effect, by his ordinance, it was in effect only for a little over 200 years. However, that Takana, the Rishonim, it was in the era of the Rishonim still that Takana expired, but it was renewed, it was accepted by the Ashkenazic Jews to, you know, lol and void, so that was accepted for all time. Now, as far as this Takana is concerned, we don't necessarily find that. However, it has been pointed out that it really isn't necessary to say that this takana should be renewed, because when it comes to polygamy, so the Torah allows it. So Rabbeinu Gershon was coming along to prohibit something that the Torah permitted. So there you could say that it's up for discussion. So he himself said that I feel he did it to protect the Benos Yisrael. He did it to protect the Jewish women, that they should be treated properly and they should have a good, healthy marriage. They shouldn't have to deal with a competing wife. So it could be that in a situation like that, since inherently the Torah allows it, so he felt that, all right, in my time, I feel that this is unacceptable, but maybe, who knows, down the road, maybe things will change. So therefore, that he made for only a certain period of time. But the poskim say that the takanos that he made that were based on something which is inherently usur, this shouldn't be done at all. So then it's muvan, it's understood that those things go forever. So therefore this takana of not reading someone else's mail is something which is self-understood, because it touches on issues of gzela, you're taking somebody's thing without permission, and even if you're not, you can say, I won't pick it up, I'll just bend over and read it, you know, I'll just go to the person's computer screen that is on when the guy went out of his office, you know, to get a cup of coffee, I just ran quickly over to see what he has on his screen. So you say, well, I'm not stealing anything in that sense. But nevertheless, the poskim tell us that this touches on the prohibition of the Torah of Lo Seilech Rachel Bamecha, that a person is not supposed to be a talebearer. A person is, the Isser in the Torah of Rechilus, you're not supposed to go ahead and repeat things that happen to other people. And if you turn the page, we have here from one of the Sephardic Gedolim, Rav Chaim Palagi, that he writes here, in his Sefer Halachos Ketanos, he writes, this is from one of the earlier Sephardic Achronim, Rav Moshe Chagiz. So he writes, Mashenoagin Lichtov al Hegeres Upagin, right, that we just mentioned, that they would write on the letters the idea of Paretz Geder Yishchenu Nochash, that the letter is protected under the ban of Rabbeinu Gershom. So they asked him, he's a Sephardic rabbi, they asked, Im Yesh Bo Mamish. So somebody asked him, you know, where's Sephardim? You know, Rabbeinu Gershon was an Ashkenazi, so is there anything to this? Is it really effective? So he responded very briefly. He said, Tshuva, belav hachi nira sheyesh isser. He says, even without Rabbeinu Gershon, it seems to me that there is an isser, levakesh ulechapes mastorov shel chavero. He says, I don't really, of course it's relevant what Rabbeinu Gershom said, because he said, quite frankly, I'm not even sure why Rabbeinu Gershom needed to say anything about this, because it's anyway prohibited by the Torah. Because he says, Umali lo selech rocho lacherim o laatzmo. An amazing thing. He said that when the Torah says you should not be a talebearer, so what does that mean? So everyone understands that that means that you shouldn't go repeat to somebody else what somebody, you know what he did? You know, as you should only know what this fellow did, right? He'd say something derogatory about somebody else, that's Rechilus. Says the Halachos Ketanos that the prohibition of talebearing does not require a third person. It's talebearing even to yourself. In other words, to say to myself, you know what he did? If it was something that I wouldn't have known. In other words, what's a talebearer? When you go over, when I see Reuven do something, and something which is not appropriate, then I go over to Shimon and I tell him, you know what he did? So that's what's the issue? The issue is because Shimon had no way of knowing that, and I told him. So says the halachos ketanos, if I say it to myself, if I didn't know it myself, and I got access illegally to that information myself, so then I'm tail-bearing to myself. I don't need it. What do I need another person for? In other words, the idea is that you're not supposed to spread information, so if I spread it to myself, that's also called spreading information. So therefore, he said that this would be included in the Isser of Lo Seilech Rachel Ba'Amecha, that a person should not be a tail-bearer. And thus, it emerges that Rabbeinu Gershom's Takana was really just because apparently in his time he saw that people were really breaching this mitzvah in the Torah very greatly. So just like in every generation, a Beis Din has the power to stand up against the weakness of the generation and enact strong takanos to fight that. So that's what Rabbeinu Gershom was doing. But the fact is that it was us or even without him, so therefore it's irrelevant whether a different takana of Rabbeinu Gershom may have expired. This is something which is based on a mitzvah in the Torah, and that certainly goes, and that certainly goes for all times. Yeah, I'm sorry, Mark,
according to Rabbeinu Gershom, does that mean he feels that the pasuk Parsha is telling me the Isser, the pasuk of Vayidvar Hashem Moshe Leimar is telling me the Isser of not being able to repeat something, not being able to read something in the mail, or is it
right? It sounds like he said, it sounds according to the Halachos Ketanos, it's from Oseilech Rachel Ba'Amecha, but it really emerges from all the sources. In other words, there's certain things in the Torah that it becomes clear when you put all the psukim together, this is what comes clear. The idea of not, you know, Oseilech Rachel Ba'Amecha, perhaps you could limit only to things which are damaging or embarrassing, but what about the other information? So when you put all the sources together, it emerges that a person is not supposed to repeat, or even to himself, to access information that he's not entitled to. So, and this is true even if the poskim say unanimously that this is true, even if you're not going to act upon the information, even if it's not going to cause the other person a loss, but it's just curiosity. But curiosity itself is something which is not allowed in this situation. And therefore, in today's world, where we, depending on a person's profession or a person's situation, one could have access to somebody's health reports, or you could have access to somebody's financial reports, or credit records, all kinds of things. So to simply pry into it, you know, a file was left lying around, and, you know, an office worker says, oh, that's interesting, let me just take a look and see what's happening over here. That is prohibited, it seems, by the Torah. It sounds like it would be asur min haTorah to do such a thing. And so, similarly, to eavesdrop on somebody's conversation, if they're not aware of it, to listen in, if you had the ability. Today we have, as I said at the outset, the unprecedented ability to do all kinds of things, to eavesdrop on people, even to stand outside a room where a personal conversation is taking place and people are speaking in loud tones. Sometimes you can hear a dispute between two people and you're just curious and you stand outside, I want to hear what's going on. Okay, a co-worker, sometimes the issue of shalom bias, whatever it may be, it's nobody's business. And not only is it nobody's business, but it's really, the Torah prohibits such a thing. If the person's not allowed to do that, even if you say, I'm not going to act upon it, I'm just curious, I'm not going to say it over to anybody, because the Halachos Ketanos told us that the Isser of Rechilus applies even Latzmo, to allow myself access to embarrassing information about somebody else is the Isser of Rechilus. Yes, go ahead. Okay, good question. I was about to get to that. So now, this question comes up very much. Thank you. This question comes up very much in today's world in yeshivas. It comes up a lot I could tell you, speaking personally, it comes up a lot of times where the question, comes up, is a yeshiva or a parent allowed to pry into, let's say, the child is charging the cell phone overnight, and let's see who my kid is calling. Let me see what's going on. Or let me see if my child has a smartphone or whatever, access to the internet. Let me see what sites they're looking at. Now here, there is a concern. There is a concern for the well-being of the child. Right? Now, similarly, you could have in the financial area a situation like that where a person says, I'm not just being a nosy person, but I need, you know, I want to access to certain information to know if I should do the deal with this person. Somebody came to me for a loan, so I'd like to get a hold of their private financial documents to see if they're going to be capable of repaying it. Not always, right? We all know that people don't always divulge everything, but I have the ability to find it out. So because I'm in a position where I have access, so I want to go see. Or, for example, a question which also comes up in the health field very much, a person in the medical profession who knows something about somebody, right, and then he finds out if a doctor who's treating a patient, and then he finds out that he knows that this person has a serious illness, and then he finds out that this boy or this girl is dating someone seriously and has reason to believe that this wouldn't be happening if they knew the truth. And now the question is, are you allowed to divulge that? So these are real questions that come up. This is personal information. On the other hand, but you're dealing with serious issues here. So this comes up a lot. There are tshuvas that are written on it in these topics in all of the aforementioned areas. There are tshuvas that are written. It came up with a camp. I saw a tshuva that was written, a summer camp where there was things were being stolen. Some of the campers were noticing that they were missing items, things somebody was stealing, and they wanted to know, do they have the right to go through somebody's property to see if he took it? They had a suspect. Let's go through his stuff. Let's go through his drawers. We'll send the kid out on a trip, you know, and now while he's out of camp for a few hours, let's go through all of his belongings. So are you allowed to do that or not? So a lot, these things are real shilas because of the fact that on the one hand, you know, maybe you'll catch it. On the other hand, you may, in the invasion of his privacy, you may come across things which aren't relevant, which you'll now know that were irrelevant to the situation. In other words, you may find out something else about this person that was not, you want to know if he stole the item, but now you found it, now when you were going through his personal things, you came across a letter that he got from somebody which has some other personal information. So are you allowed to do that? So the answer is that really in every situation it requires a tremendous dealing. It requires a judge. A person cannot just be callous about this. You have to be very careful. You know, you have to distinguish between how much of a suspect the person is, if it's just a wild suspicion, or if it's you have, you know, some real evidence that points to this person. So to prevent someone from a loss, we'll start from a financial area. We have a concept which we spoke about in the shiur earlier in the year of Ovid Inish Din L'Nafshe. There is a concept that if somebody steals something from me and I see that he has that stolen item, let's say my child's bike was stolen and I say, happen to go by my neighbor and I see in the back, there's the bike. He has my kid's bike. So the halacha is that I am allowed to go take it back myself. I don't have to call the police. I'm allowed to go ahead and save myself the hassle and just go take back the bike. In that respect, I could take the law into my own hands. Okay, to save oneself from a loss, a person in need can take the law into their own hands with certain parameters. We spoke about this several months ago. So, you know, so it could well be that, you know, if there's somebody who's damaging the tzibur, in other words, you have a kid in a camp or a staff member in a camp who is stealing, you know, and you know, or whatever it may be, so then the camp, if they have reason, strong reason to suspect it, just to go ahead and start looking through everybody's things is much harder to justify because you're invading people's privacy. This is usur. How could you just do that? There has to be, you have to have, you know, like, in a certain sense, the same way the police need a warrant to go into somebody, they can't just walk in. There's a respect for privacy. You have to have a warrant to go in and check somebody's property. So in the halacha also that's true, that a person needs some sort of warrant. It has to be justified. Somebody has to justify this. That this is really, it's a big crisis. We're having a lot of trouble. And if that is the case, then a person would be allowed to do it on the principle of Ovid Inish Dino Anavshe, the fact that I am trying to go ahead and prevent a further loss. So, you know, if someone's stealing, it'll more people will be victimized. And not only that, but it could jeopardize the whole camp, because parents will say, the next year, I can't send my child, it's not a safe environment. Everyone there got ripped off, everyone who went there. So therefore, in a situation like that, where it's b'makom p'seda, so then a person would be allowed to go ahead and do that. But again, a deal has to be made, a judgment has to be made. When it comes to, someone asked Rav Moshe Sternbuch in the Yerushalayim, he used to be the chief rabbi in Johannesburg in South Africa, and he has in his Sefer Tshuvos Van Hugga, somebody who was involved in a Din Torah, got access to a sealed letter that he claimed that somebody had stolen a tremendous amount of money from him. Thousands and thousands of rand, which is the currency that's used in South Africa. He said thousands and thousands of let's say dollars were taken, and he had access to a letter, and he felt that if he read that letter, it could help his case. So he came to Rav Moshe Sternbuch and asked him, is he allowed to open the letter? So he said, also based on this reasoning, he said, on the one hand, you know, it's a violation of privacy. On the other hand, it could prevent a person from a loss. He said, but then again, to just simply say a heter for this opens up a Pandora's box, because then every person is going to start reading everyone else's mail under the guise of, well, it may save me from a loss. So where do you draw the line with these things? So he said to this person that I think you should go to a Beis Din and go in front of three people and explain to them, he didn't have time to get involved himself, he said, explain to them exactly how reading this letter could save you from a loss. And if they feel that it's, you know, you can't judge this yourself, because obviously a person has a bias. He said, if they feel that this can be done, that they feel that reading the letter is important and it could help you and it could save you from this tremendous loss that you're incurring, then fine. But they may say that despite the fact that you're having a loss, reading this letter isn't going to change very much. And therefore, it's only a wild, you know, guess that maybe this letter is going to have bearing. And meanwhile, you're going to see something that you're going to see private information. So that's what he said a person should do. So again, there's a certain respect has to come for other people. Now, when you know, as far as a parent, this is the question, a parent with a child. So here you're dealing very often, sometimes you could be dealing in the monetary situation, but very often you're dealing with a spiritual concern. You know, today, especially with all the technology, what kids could do today, things that could never be done years ago. And this is a real issue that all educators across the board are aware of, and parents are across the board aware, should be aware of. So the again, here you have to weigh it. In other words, on the one hand, There is a pasuk in the Torah, an iser in the Torah, lo samad al dam reecha. Lo samad al dam reecha means that you're not allowed to stand by the blood of your fellow Jew, which in the most literal sense means that if someone is killing, is attempting to murder a Jew, and you have the ability to stop it, you're obligated by the Torah to go ahead and stop it. However, the Gemara expounds upon this iser and says that this would be true even if it was just for a financial loss, and the poskim say that this was, in other words, losam el damrech is not just if he's going to die. It's even if he's going to have a loss. If you could save another Jew from a loss, so there's an iser of losam el damrech. And a loss is not just a monetary loss. So a great spiritual loss, a person should endure a great spiritual decline, and I have the ability to prevent it, is also Osam al Dam Reecha. So therefore, especially a parent who has the achrayus, a parent who has the responsibility, the primary responsibility of the well-being of a child, so it seems from the poskim, would have the right to look on the child's phone or whatever it may be. But again, that doesn't necessarily mean that you could look through everything, because a child is entitled to privacy too. Just because you're a child doesn't mean that they're not your property. It's your child. So therefore, they're also entitled to a certain privacy. So you have to know, what are you looking for? What are you looking for? You know, in a situation where you're going to go through somebody's phone and you want to see who they're involved with, okay, that's fine. Do you have to necessarily read every message that's there, especially if you know that there's a message that was sent from a good friend, somebody who you're not suspicious of, somebody who you know your child is involved with, who's a good person, and they sent a message. The tendency is once you have it, you know, you start reading everything. But, you know, what do you have to read that for? That's not relevant. You're worried about a certain thing. So what you're worried about, you're allowed to take care of. But in general, the basic respect for a person's privacy is something that has to remain. Okay? When it comes to, there are tshuvas about this that have been written, you know, especially in the financial areas where a person has access to mail. Today you have with email all kinds of things. The same rules apply. Now, when it comes to things that were said in confidence, right? We said before health issues, psychological issues. So obviously there are laws. There are very strict laws that exist in this country, which is a very good thing that you have those laws. But beyond that, another issue emerges, which is a very fascinating halachic issue, which is let's say, for example, I heard this shiloh once from somebody. A person was selling health insurance, and they found out someone approached them to purchase health insurance. And they found out that in this person's family was a very serious illness. That was a number of people in the family had it. And this person was a religious fellow, so now he had a question that, if he knows somebody who, let's say, is interested in getting involved in a shidduch with this family, does he have to say something to them? Because not always are people up front, and not always the people, especially, this type of thing could scare everyone off. And, it's a very, very delicate, sensitive issue, and the poskim deal with this all the time, and, everyone has to know how to handle these things. But this person wanted to know, does he have a responsibility to do so? So, aside from everything else, there is the practical reality that if he would ever do such a thing, he would lose his job, he would lose his business. Because it's something that's said in confidence, if it gets repeated, he'll be wiped out immediately. So now the question is, if that's the case, so let's say the guy says, alright, but I have to do the right thing. So the question is, do you have to give up your whole business for such a mitzvah? Now, in general, there is a distinction that's made between mitzvah saseh and mitzvah lo saseh. When it comes to a positive mitzvah, the Gemara tells us that a person does not have to give up more than 20% of their assets to fulfill a mitzvah. If a person has, if a person has $100 total in assets, and it comes Sukkot and is selling a srogan for $50, so he's putter from buying an esrog. He doesn't have to buy one, because buying an esrog will mean that he's giving up 50% of his assets, and you're only obligated to give up at the most 20%. Okay, now when it comes to a mitzvah lo saseh, when it comes to a negative mitzvah, there's a dispute amongst the Rishonim whether the same rule applies, and the reality is that we pass in halacha like the strict shita that when it comes to violating a negative mitzvah, a person would have to give up all their money. In other words, not to violate a mitzvah. However, poskim say that that's only true to actively violate a mitzvah. In other words, to go ahead and eat something which isn't kosher, the boss says, if you don't eat this, you're fired. So a person would have to give up his job because of the fact that you're not allowed to do that. To eat that would be an active violation of the Torah. But what about violating a negative commandment passively? In other words, like, lo samad al dam re'echa, you're not supposed to stand by and watch your fellow Jew suffer. If I don't help him, so I'm violating the Torah, but I'm violating the Torah in a passive mode. I'm not actively violating the Torah. I'm not doing anything. I'm not doing something. So in that situation, it seems that there are many that say that you don't have to, that the rule would revert back to the same rule as for a positive mitzvah. So on that basis, it would come out that a professional would not have an obligation to divulge the information because of the fact that if he did so, aside from everything else, aside from the morality of it, which, obviously that's what we've been saying until now, but aside from all of that, it would also be, if it's going to cost him his job, So since he's not violating the mitzvah in an active way, just passively, so he would not have to say it. But on the other hand, there are certain situations where we know that you know, in certain cases, you may have to say something. The people are not always forthcoming with information, and sometimes with information that's relevant. Sometimes there's information that's very important and it's not given over. So we know that the Chafetz Chaim tells us in the laws of Lashon Hara, so the Chafetz Chaim tells us that there are certain situations where a person is permitted to say something negative about somebody else if there's a toelis, if there's going to be a benefit to the person who's hearing it. If someone's trying to sell you their house, and your neighbor is put the house up for sale, and you know from living there that there's a very big problem with the house, and he's not divulging it, and somehow he's able to conceal it even from the inspectors who come or whatever it may be. This happens all the time, right? I know there's a problem here. So do I have to say anything or not? So the Chafetz Chaim says that in that situation, you know, now you get into question Lashon Hara. You know, you're saying over something which is negative about somebody else. But on the other hand, you have to balance it because you have the prohibition of Lashon Hara, but you also have the prohibition of Losamen al Damrayecha, that you can't stand by and let this go on. So, generally speaking, the rule is that if you know this to be true, you have the right to say it. It's not called Lashon Hara. You have the right to say it because there's going to be a real benefit. The person really needs to know this. This is a serious thing. If you don't give him this information, he can incur a very great loss. He could have a tremendous amount of grief. However, the Chafetz Chaim tells us that there are certain requirements for this. That it's person, you can't just go ahead on the guise of toeles, on the guise of saying that it's beneficial, and just say what you want. So the Chafetz Chaim essentially tells us a few rules that we have to keep in mind. And it's very hard to fulfill all these conditions. But among them are, number one, you have to know yourself firsthand the problem. In other words, it can't be that you heard this from somebody. It has to be that you know that it's a problem. In other words, I know that my neighbor has a problem with his roof or whatever, has a problem with something, because I've seen it. I've seen it. You know, I was there. I know it's there. And I know it myself. Okay? But if it was hearsay, if it's saying over what I heard from somebody else, that's not included in the heter, because who said what you heard was accurate? You don't know. That someone else told you. Who said? The person who said it knows what they're saying. So that's one condition. A second condition would be that you can't exaggerate. You have to say exactly what the problem is and nothing more. You can't say, oh, this house is a disaster. You don't want to get anywhere. You're going to buy this guy's car? Are you kidding? This car is just, you can't talk in hyperbole. You can't say what the problem is. In other words, I know this car I know the transmission's going on this car. I know. Okay? Or I know this car has, you know, that may stop the deal. On the other hand, certain things may not change the deal. It won't stop the deal. It'll just maybe cause the price to be lowered. I know he has a problem with his carburetor. I know for sure. He has a problem with his carburetor. Okay? He may not tell you that, but I know that. Okay? So but you can't say that this car is a piece of junk. In other words, to say, you're gonna buy this car? What a lemon. That's a general, exaggerated term. You have to be specific. You have to say exactly what the problem is. And, you know, there are a number of other requirements. One could look in the Klal Tess in the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, where he goes through, you have to have sincere intentions. You can't be doing it because you want to get at the person. You have to be mechaven l'shem shamayim, which is not such an easy thing. In other words, I'm not saying it because I can't stand my neighbor. So I'm saying this, you know, this house is terrible, but I'm enjoying the fact that I'm killing his deal, right? That you can't do either. It has to be that you're mechaven l'shem shamayim, that you're doing it because you're trying to save someone else for a loss. These are all situations where the respect for the privacy of someone else's information or someone else's life has to be taken into great, great consideration. And without doing that, there are many, many shilas that come up. The questions whether a person is allowed to, say certain things. This is an area where shilas don't get asked as much as they should. You know, nowadays there's much more of a knowledge of halacha in our time, Baruch Hashem, due to many reasons, right? That people much more knowledgeable in halacha, and people ask shilas. But when it comes to these matters, somehow, when it comes to personal issues, we don't necessarily ask the shilas as much as we should. But this is an area where a person has to be sensitized. Yeah, go ahead.
One quickie question.
What? Yeah, go ahead.
While I was training to be a specialist,
yes.
I used to do insurance physicals in the prone neighborhood.
Yes.
And I used to go to people from
right.
The insurance company and examine them and get their history and report to the insurance company.
Right. Right.
And if I'm told something by the prone Jew about
okay.
something that I know will deny him his insurance,
okay.
can I tell that to the insurance
okay,
company?
Okay, so I would assume, okay, there you have it. Okay, that's a good shilas. So I would assume that would fall under the same situation, that if you don't report it, so that they'll say it's active. In other words, here I'm actively reporting it. It's not that I'm withholding information. I'm actively reporting it. So I can't say definitively, but what I think has to be done in situations like that is that you have to explain to the person ahead of time that, look, this is what I'm here for, and this is what I have to do. This is my job. I have to tell them, okay? You have from people that work for the IRS too, you know, that I had a cousin who worked for the IRS. He wasn't the most popular guy in town, but that was his job. Okay, so now what do you do in a situation like that? So it gets into a lot of questions. You could end up in prison, if you don't say, you have to know. So sometimes I think, really, this is a shaila for a posek, but I would say that if you, at the very least, the person should be told in advance that this is what I have to do, and I hope you understand that. And whatever I find out, I have to relate to them. And if I find out that you have, a history of a certain illness in your family, you're going to be denied the insurance, and that's just the way it is. And I can't lie. From your standpoint, you're lying. What are you going to do? You're going to tell the insurance company that he's good? So that's also, there's a question of gzela. In other words, now they're going to insure the fellow. They'll very likely be paying out for him, Chalila, if the history repeats itself. So they're going to be paying out who knows how much money and on a fraudulent, essentially fraudulent situation. So there's a surim on both sides of the fence. So if they're restoring on both sides of the fence, then probably you're not allowed to lie. You can't lie, so he won't get the insurance. What could you do?
But when I came into these people,
yeah.
First of all, I was wearing a yarmulke,
yeah.
Because it was in a rural neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
And I used to tell them, look, I'm here for the insurance company.
Uh-huh.
Whatever you tell me, I have to report to the insurance company.
Okay.
So I put the onus on them.
That's it. That's
then
it.
After they tell me,
you tell them that. You tell them that. Then it's up to them. That's it. Listen, they have the same thing. We all know accountants, right? You can suspect. Something's being covered up here. They say, well, how is that possible? You live in a 38-room mansion and you're only showing $8,000 of income for the year 2012. It doesn't really make sense, right? But okay, listen. You have to be upfront. You have to tell them that some people take the approach that I'm just reporting what you tell me. I'm just reporting what you tell me. This is what you tell me. But on the other hand, in a case of an insurance company, there's a real question of gzeila. It's gzeila. What are you going to go ahead? The insurance company, you can't steal from Goyim either. So therefore, it doesn't help that the company is run by Goyim. It doesn't change the halacha at all. So they're going to go ahead and be paying out. These are things that come up. There's no doubt about it. They come up. I'm sorry, Tavio.
If you're intending on making a partnership with someone,
yeah,
it's relevant to you to find out
yes.
information from that person, but he is withholding information. Are you allowed to?
So if it's beneficial to you, if it's beneficial to you and it's going to cause you a loss and you feel that the person is withholding information, that's where it's possible to obtain a heter to even pry into something that might be personal. That's where a heter would be given. However, I am not intending to say that it's a blanket heter, because this is so easily abused that a person has to have a Rav who's knowledgeable in the halacha, who they trust and they feel they can speak to, and they tell him, listen, this is the situation, I have to know this. It could cost me who knows how much. You know, I have very strong reason to believe that the person not being honest with me, and have the ability. But you know, if you're just going to give a blanket heter, everyone will be eavesdropping on everyone else's conversation, and Hashem Yirachem, what will happen to the world? Everybody, the privacy is a tremendous thing for there are certain things that should stay private. It's not like every piece of information in the world should be publicized. The contrary to the popular culture, there are a lot of things that should remain private. No, what does anyone have to know this for? It's nobody's business. It's under control. It's nobody's business. So that's where it should stay. So anyway, I just want to conclude with, you know, we started off that Bilam saw the fact that people had the privacy, that they that the tents were not lined up. So if you just turn over the page, just very, very briefly, there is also something in the halacha, we referred to this earlier in the year, a concept was called Hezek Riyah. Hezek Riyah, which is discussed at the beginning of Maseches Bava Basra, is the idea that the damaging someone else by depriving them privacy in a situation where they need it. So for example, we saw the Mishnah that said that you can't open a window over your friend's property if it's going to now be overlooking his area, because now he can't use his backyard. Right? A person likes to go tan, the suntan. You can go out, you know, in a bathing suit or something like that, go sit out in the back. And now, I open up a window. Right? Now this is not such a simple shiloh, because in this neighborhood in particular, where most of the houses are ranch houses, they're all one-story houses, so generally speaking, there is a great deal of natural privacy that you can't easily see into someone else's backyard. But with the growth of the religious community, you know, houses have been deemed not to be big enough, and people are adding on to their houses and building up. Okay, now you build up a second story, so you say, all right, what's wrong with that? Nothing. You're allowed to, if you have the money, you're allowed to build up, call a kavod, make yourself a second story. But now, wait a second. But now, with my second story, if I have a window here, I could see my neighbor's swimming pool in plain view, which I could not see previously. So now that there's a question. There's a question, you're allowed to make a window there. Because now my neighbor right away see, well, oh my gosh, look what happened now. Now they have a window, I'm not going to use the pool anymore, I don't feel comfortable. I don't feel comfortable using the pool. So you know, even though they assured me that they're not going to look, but you know how it is, that everyone is sensitive, and I don't want that interested in anybody seeing private things, so I'm not going to use the pool. This is a real question, and it could be that in a situation like that, a person may not be allowed to put a window in a place like that, or may need to put some sort of fence or some sort of wall blocking their view, and that has to be their expense. That because they are causing you harm. You'll say, well, what's the harm? I'm not breaking anything. But this is called in the halacha hezek riyah. This is called damage of invasion of privacy. This is a real shiloh. Where I say with the spread of the two-story, had the rise, no pun intended, of the two-story houses, right? So now you have a situation where, you know, you have the ability to see, to deprive others of privacy. This is a very big question. One could read here the Shulchan Aruch Harav, which has very concise form, we don't have time for it, but in very concise form, some of the halachas that apply to that. But this is a shaila that also needs to be asked. This is a question, do I have the right to do that? Do I have the right, even without building up a second story, do I have the right to, now I'm doing some construction, I want to add a window, but my window now makes it right opposite my neighbor's window. So now when my window's open and their window's open, I can see straight into their house. So even if I don't care, doesn't mean that they don't care. And I have no right to be mevater. A person does not have the right to say that I don't care about privacy, so they have no right to care about it either. It doesn't work that way. Privacy is a right that the halacha gives to every person. A person entitled to privacy. The privacy of a person has to be guarded and protected. And to do so is not always easy. But on the other hand, if people are meticulous in these halachas, it merits, as Bilam said, "Vatihil of Ruach Hashem." Right? This is zocha. A person with Klal Yisrael zocha tashras hashchina. This is a great virtue to respect the privacy of other people. Something that we really have to take into consideration in our times. Shukar.